Now this evening we read from the Psalms, Psalm 63, Psalm 63. O God, you are my God. Early will I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh longs for you in a dry and thirsty land where there is no water. So I have looked for you in the sanctuary to see your power and your glory, because your loving kindness is better than life. My lips shall praise you. Thus I will bless you while I live. I will lift up my hands in your name. My soul shall be satisfied as with marrow and fatness, and my mouth shall praise you with joyful lips. When I remember you on my bed, I meditate on you in the night watches, because you have been my help. Therefore, in the shadow of your wings, I will rejoice. My soul follows close behind you. Your right hand upholds me. But those who seek my life to destroy it shall go into the lower parts of the earth. They shall fall by the sword. They shall be a portion for jackals. But the king shall rejoice in God. Everyone who swears by him shall glory. But the mouth of those who speak lies shall be stopped. David is an interesting character study of the Old Testament. Described as a man after God's own heart, he lived a life that really plumbed the depths of all types of emotions, from anguish to joy, from courage to concern and worry at times. We might say that David's life could be divided into two large sections. That time of his being a king over Israel and having such success that much of the glory and the power and the might and the wealth of Solomon was owed to the work, the hard work at that, of his father David. And then there's that early part of his life, the formative years, which are described, I think, by many of these psalms. And it could be said that much of the effect he had on the world was because of his latter years. Much of the effect upon his nation was because of those latter years of reigning as king over Israel. But the best of David is seen in his early years. It could be said that in terms of David's life, the best of him was found in the earliest part and the worst of him in the latter part. But here in the early parts, we see David so close and so dependent upon and so thankful to the God of heaven, a spirit that would not leave him throughout his life, though it may seem to wane from time to time. But it's in his early days like you never see it quite the same later. It is the spirit that gave him the courage to fight Goliath. And even before that time, it's the type of attitude toward heaven that he had that caused God to anoint him and choose him for the anointed, even while Saul was still in power and on the throne. And you might remember, as you consider the Old Testament history of David's story, that David was anointed by Samuel, by God's direction, because God looked at the heart, and apparently even then his heart was so right before God. And for some time then after that, though he was selected by God, there was still a king, Saul, on the throne, which David saw and refused to take vengeance against, because after all this, for the time, was still God's anointed on the throne of Israel. And the reason he was in contrast and in contest with Saul is because of what happened with the slaying of Goliath and the time just after that when David became a mighty warrior and the sounds that Saul could hear of his own people exalting this young man David and in contrast, downplaying their own King Saul, saying Saul has killed his thousands, but David has killed his tens of thousands. Well, Saul heard that, and because of his envious and evil spirit, he becomes a shell of his former self and begins to chase after David, even trying to take his life, at one time throwing a javelin at him, doing his best to end David's life. And for a good portion of that part of 1 Samuel, we find David running from Saul for his very life. And during this time, David feels so very close to God and doesn't waste his time, doesn't use his time foolishly and complaining about his lot. He realizes that God is with him because, of course, God has anointed him. He realizes that God will protect him. God has already seen that and shown that in his life prior. He continues to have faith in God, and that faith seems to grow as the adversity grows, so that David is stronger after the fact of running from Saul than he was before this started. And though his life was filled with much anguish, some caused by outside forces and some caused by his own missteps, the fact is simply before us that David had a close affinity for, reverence for, and deep abiding love for the God of heaven. As this psalm reflects. And I'd like you to notice, if you have your Bible with you, and if not, you'll have to take my word that it's here, that David makes reference to two times during the day when he is especially involved in thanking God for what he has. He begins by saying, "O God, you are my God, early will I seek you." And then he mentions in verse number 6, "When I remember you on my bed, I meditate on you in the night watches." Have you noticed that, as the Bible says, as he thinks in his heart, so is he, that so much of our life is determined by our thoughts, and not just those fleeting thoughts that come and go, but those thoughts we choose to ruminate with and dwell upon. Those thoughts become the basis of our whole philosophy of life and the very foundation for life itself. In a very real sense, we can say that the mind creates the life as much as life creating the mind. We are, in terms of our thinking, what we think. But so much of this is determined by how we start the day and how we end the day. And this beginning of the day precludes our interaction with others. And this ending to the day, it follows after our interaction with others. And the long and short of it is we start the day by ourselves every day. And we end the day every day with ourselves. And you might say, "Well, no, I'm sleeping right next to them." Well, no, that's true in a sense, but when you go to sleep at night, after you've said good night and turned over to go to sleep, the last person that you're with is you. The last thoughts you have are your own. And that's why some of us stay awake all night, tossing and turning and wondering and worrying. The last person you talk to at night is yourself, perhaps. And we'll get back to that in just a second. And then if you finally get to sleep somehow and you fitfully get through the night, the morning comes either with or without an alarm, and you wake up, and as you're waking up, you're halfway in, halfway out, partly asleep and partly awake, and you're in that time of the day that you'd like to continue if you could, but you know at some point you got to get up for one reason or another. And again, who are you with? You're with yourself. And so much of what we do in our life depends upon that which we have in our minds as we go to sleep and that which we have in our minds as we come out of sleep. Because we set the tone for the day. You think, well, my tone's set when I have my first cup of coffee. Well, no, really, you've said it before you've had that first sip. When my day starts when I first interact with those around me. Well, no, your day has started before then. And we've all been here. We've all been to a place where we wake up and for reasons completely unknown to us sometimes, we get off on a tangent in one way or the other, thinking about things that make absolutely no sense. And before you know it, our day is gone and lost and ruined before we've ever had anything to do with it, because we've ruined it with our thinking. And the same happens at the last of night. Now, usually what happens with our thinking is that, and I know I'm not talking to any of you because I'm sure you're past this point, but with other people that are not here to hear this, the problem sometimes with thinking is we just allow the automatic default position to take over. If I ask you, what are you thinking about? Well, I don't know. Let me think about it. Well, I'm thinking about this. I'm thinking about that. And this happened, I'm thinking about that. What David's doing here is he's consciously deciding what to dwell on. When he gets up, and especially as he goes to sleep, he's consciously deciding, this is what I'm choosing to think about. And in both cases, it's the same thing. It's what God has done. It's the thanksgiving to God for what he has done. It's not to worry about what might happen tomorrow. It's not anxiety or anxiousness or angst about what could happen down the road. It's, well, look at David's own words here. When he's in the night watches, he says, you have been my help, and therefore in the shadow of your wings I will rejoice. You have been my help. That reminds me a bit of that portion of Psalm 115, the portion that the song where the Sandersons come from, the Lord has been mindful of me, where after the psalmist has spoken about the false idols that are put up that have ears and eyes and noses and throats and can't do anything with them, in contrast to these idols which are gods which are not, that don't exist, that aren't real, we have a God in heaven who is not just existing, but the Lord has been mindful of us. He cares about us. Well, that's what David is considering as he goes to sleep at night. The Lord has been mindful of me. Now, we have a song we sing also, accounts for many blessings, name them one by one. What better time to do that than as you're drifting off to sleep? And you might be saying, well, I'm not even sure how to do that. Well, I'll tell you how to do it. You start by saying, I am thankful for, and then you finish the sentence. I'm thankful for. And if you can't finish the sentence, you need to do some real thinking about what's going on in your life. Because the best of the Bible's heroes, the characters in both Testaments, are people who've gone through, David is here, a terrible adversity, but in the midst of that, they could say, I am thankful for. Because the truth is, I don't know all the struggles you're facing. If we had a way to introspectively look within ourselves and then outside ourselves look into the spirits and souls and lives of everyone here tonight, we'd have all different kinds of problems and struggles that others of us don't even know about. I know that. But I also know this, that somehow, by some means, in some way, here we are, February the 5th, 2023, believe it or not, on a Sunday evening, together, worshiping God. In spite of the struggles we've gone through, we're here. In spite of the adversities we've faced, somehow we're here. Those problems in our past that seemed so insurmountable we couldn't possibly get through them, somehow we did, and we're here. Because to this point, the Lord has been mindful of us. He hadn't kept us free from problems. He hasn't taken all of our struggles away from us. He knows many of these, if we allow them to, make us stronger, resolve our will, and give us patience. But with all of that in mind, still, we are here where we are because God has been good enough that we're here to enjoy and be a part of a service like this with others of like faith. The Lord has been mindful of us. And I know we're tempted as we drift off to sleep to think about, well, I have to do this tomorrow, and this could go wrong if I do it the wrong way, or I need to talk to this person down the, and if I say it, I don't know. Before we know it, we're in a world of worry. When if instead we simply forget that, or not forget that, just distract ourselves from that by consciously saying, you know what? I'm thankful for this, and I'm thankful for them. And I'm thankful for this working out this way. And even at times we can say, I'm thankful that even though at the time this seemed like things were going in the wrong direction, looking back on it now, I realize this, as Paul would say about his own bonds in Philippians 1, has fallen out to the furtherance of the gospel or to my life or the best working out. I'm thankful for. Now, this is a wonderful example we have from David here, but let me tell you something beyond just the fact it's right and God would have us do this. It's better for us. Physically, physiologically, psychologically, I know spiritually, it's good for us. The most joyful people are not those who have more than the rest of us. The happiest people aren't those that have experienced happier circumstances than we have. The most joyful, the happiest, the most at peace people are those who've consciously chosen to think that way. And the time to do it, the best time to do it, is when you're drifting off to sleep. Because if you haven't noticed, now, I know this psalm starts in the morning and ends in the evening. I started tonight in the evening. I'm working my way toward the morning because from my perspective, so many times, your morning starts the way your last night ended. You go to bed with worries and you're going to wake up with them. You go to bed with anxiety, you're going to wake up with them. You go to bed bothered, you're going to wake up that way. But on the other hand, when you drift off to sleep in a mode and mood of thanksgiving and joy and peace, it gives you a better night's sleep and a calmer day the next day and a better way of waking up. Better than a prescription of sleeping pills, in my opinion. I'm not against them when they're needed. In moderation, don't take the whole bunch at one time. But in many cases, they can be avoided just by getting a grip on our thinking and deciding to be thankful rather than grumbling Christians, to be thankful rather than be anxious and worrying Christians, to be thankful rather than going to the default position of just imagining what worse could happen than's happened already. But that's as you're going off to sleep. And as I say, if you change your life for the better tonight, nobody will know about it unless you tell them. except for the fact they might see you smiling more the next day. They might see you in a better mood the next day. They might see the effects it's had on you, but they won't know why. Only you'll know, because you're the one talking to yourself and hopefully talking to God in your thanksgiving. Because when you say, "I'm thankful for," you're addressing this to God. "I'm thankful to God for this. I'm not just lucky, I'm blessed. I'm not just lucky, I've been graced by all God has done for me. I have what I have not by happenstance or accident or coincidence. I have what I have, I am what I am. I accomplish what I do because God has seen fit to bless me as He has in the ways He's chosen." But then I get up. And I think it's easier sometimes for us to get a grip on going to sleep than it is waking up. Because going to sleep, we are consciously drifting off. And getting up, we many of us already have our day kind of planned before we ever really open our eyes. And because of that, we get up, "I've got to do this, I've got to do the other, I've got this, I've got so much to do, I can't possibly get it all done." And one of the strange ironies of life is that you can actually get more done in less time if you spend some quality time in getting your mind right first. There's nothing like the misdirection of a mind gone wild to waste more time than you need and to waste more time in accomplishing nothing that you want to, because you haven't got your mind in the right place to start with. And so you end the day in thanksgiving and prayer, and you start the day. You know, when you think about it, it's a mystery. It's a mystery. I still don't understand it. Scientists can't tell us why we need to sleep. Oh, they've got theories, but there's no real answer to why we need to sleep. But we do. You know we do. If you've gone without it for a while, you know it's absolutely necessary. But why? Well, God made us that way. But after our sleep for the night is over, we wake up the next day. We set the tone for that day consciously by doing the same thing we ended the day with the day before. Not with a checklist of things to accomplish. And not with worries about what might go wrong today. But with thanksgiving. And here's the mystery of it. It amazes me that we all wake up the next day. You go to sleep, and I know some don't. I've had some good friends, and I remember so well when I was at Liberal, Kansas years ago preaching, we had an elderly member there, a good, wonderful Christian man, that when he led prayer, would always include the phrase, "And Lord, when our time comes, give us a quiet hour to pass over." And he passed away in his sleep one night. What a wonderful way to go. If you want to know, that's the way I'd like to go. But we don't have choices along that line. But it amazes me that you go to sleep at night and it's almost as if you're dead for a while, and then you wake back up as if it never happened. It's a mystery to me. We wake up refreshed and renewed and ready for the new day, and the first thing we should do, and again, it's not anything that anybody knows about. We're with us. It's an internal matter. First thing we should do is, "I'm thankful for a new day." Others don't have this day. There are those who went to sleep and they didn't wake up like I did for this new day. I'm thankful to have this day. And I'll do with it what I can, but before I ever get to that doing what I can, I am thankful I have this day, and I'm thankful for what God has done in the past. Well, look at what David's words are here. "Early will I seek you. My soul thirsts for coffee." Now, I must have read that wrong there. I did. I apologize. "My soul thirsts for you. My flesh longs for you in a dry and thirsty land where there is no water." It's a longing not for nourishment, not for coffee, not for interaction, a longing for God and His presence in a land that's so dry without it. You know what it's like to be in a drought and then the rain finally comes. That's why Moses will say in Deuteronomy 32, my speaking for God now, my doctrine, my teachings will drop as the rain. The parched earth, it changes in just a few minutes when the rain starts coming down. We wake up to a world of darkness, but we have light within us because of God. We have light within us through His Word. We have light from God in the example Christ offers. We have light from God in the providence and doors He opens for us. We have everything we need from God, but the world doesn't supply that. It's a dry and parched place in the absence of God. And so the first thing we need to do is bring down the rains of God's goodness. And it takes place again right here by setting our minds for the day. Now, I'll remind you one more time before our time is completely evaporated this evening that David is saying this in some circumstances that aren't ideal. In fact, the best of David's psalms are from a context of difficulty, adversity, and actual peril. And we sometimes think, if I just had a smoother life, if I just had more time that wasn't so dominated by my schedule, if I just had people that treated me better, if I just had things going in a smoother way in my life, I would be able to spend the time to get closer to God and think more about Him. And the opposite is true. The more difficulty we have, the more we should be drawn to understanding that we must rely upon God, and that starts right here by acknowledging what God has done for us, the promises He has made to us, the help He does offer us. Doesn't the Bible still say, casting all your care upon Him? He cares for you. We know that. And to end the day that way and to start the day that way changes so much of who we are and how we operate. And so I just read this psalm this evening with you to encourage all of us, myself included, perhaps to be more conscious of what we think through the day, but especially to be conscious as we think, drifting off to sleep and waking up to start a new day. And the more, the closer, more emphasis we have upon God in these times, the better our day will be, the better our lives will be. Friends, if you're here tonight and not a Christian, change that before this service is over and become one. If you are a child of God and have drifted away, come back. If you need to come, come now as together we stand and sing.